On this episode of Mic Drop Dallas, we talk about two of our favorite things, sports and sports business. We're going to be joined by local radio legend, now podcaster Dan McDowell, to talk Rangers, Stars, Mavericks. Who am I leaving out, Monica? Rangers, Stars, Mavericks. Oh, yeah, Cowboys, who have the draft going on this week. Then Paul McCormick of Genesco stops by to pull the curtain back on what makes Dallas-Fort Worth a red-hot market for sports business. It's season 5, episode 4. Let's drop the mic and let's go. Welcome to Mic Drop Dallas, everybody, the official podcast of the Dallas Sports Commission. Kevin Sullivan here, along with Dallas Sports Commission Executive Director Monica Paul. Our usual wingman, Marcus, next level Marcus Carr, is on a well-deserved break today. So, Monica, you and I are going to have to go it alone today somehow. We're joined. Danielle's making it all work, so we'll be fine. Before we get to our guests, as always, we've had some recent mic drop moments. Now, Monica, you're a big golf fan. No mic drop moment of late is bigger than Scottie Scheffler, our own Scottie Scheffler, and Monica's fellow Texas Longhorn Scottie Scheffler, winning his second Masters and then following it up with a win at the RBC Heritage at Hilton Head. So he got the green jacket, and then the next week he gets the red plaid jacket they give out there at Hilton Head. Something that hasn't happened since Bernhard Langer did it way back in 1985. And by the way, Monica, the last player on the PGA Tour to win the week after a major was Tiger Woods back in 2006. Now, where does Scotty stand on your list of favorite PGA Tour golfers?
Oh, I think he's easily in the top three. You know, I've got Jordan Spieth. I've got I'm a Tiger fan as well. Yeah. Then I'd say Scotty. Brooks used to be up there, but he's since kind of fallen down the list.
Another mic drop moment is the Dallas Wings selling out season tickets for the first time in franchise history. We're going to talk with both of our guests today about the surge in interest in women's sports. This is a big deal, but maybe not the biggest news with the Wings. There are reports about the Wings moving to Dallas from their current home on the UT Arlington campus. What do you make of that, Monica?
Well, I think this is exciting news for the Wings, for the city of Dallas, actually for many groups actually looking to move to Dallas, knowing that we're going to have another arena downtown that's going to be renovated and has hosted many events, but is actually going to be new. So from a Wings standpoint, I couldn't be more excited to be downtown city center. You know, they already have great partnerships that they've developed with the Dallas Mavericks. I just see the energy that we're seeing in women's sports, women's basketball. We've seen what NCAA Women's Final Four looks like here and the support that comes along with it. Things have been surging already for the Wings while they are in Arlington, and I don't see that stopping. I just see that to be continual growth for them. So we'll be excited if the city council does pass this, that there'll be new residents of Dallas in 2026.
Very exciting. I know there's always World Cup, you know, FIFA World Cup 2026 action going on. What else has happened at the Sports Commission?
Well, Vex Robotics is taking over the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center right now as we speak. They're announcing their new game, the arena. Competition is going to be kicking off. So really excited to have them back. Doing a lot of prep work for this summer for Copa America. We're anticipating a lot of teams, not only the ones playing here, but some of them flying into DFW as they start to prepare for some of their other matches. So that's been exciting. A lot of World Cup work going on now that, you know, the match schedule was released in February, starting to get a little bit deeper in a lot of the planning phases. So for whether it be transportation, sustainability is doing great. About to start some critical human rights work. FIFA's going to announce their human rights framework. We had a great committee that put together a plan 2 to 3 years ago during the bid phase. So looking to really re-engage there. And probably the most critical piece is hoping to go out to market in May to start having some discussions about host city supporter program. There are people here, corporations, people locally who can help support us. We provide them with some assets at the end of the day for us to be able to pay to host the World Cup and to build in the legacy programs that we want to ensure stay after 2026.
Always lots happening. So way to go on all that, Monica. Now back in a moment to talk sports sponsorship with Paul McCormick of Genesco Sports Enterprises. First, over to Rachel.
Get ready, sports fans. This fall is stacked with events right here in the Big D. From food sport to football, the number one sports business city has something for everyone. Head to dallassports.org to sign up for access to exclusive ticket announcements, discounts, and pre-sales to be part of the next big win.
Thanks, Rachel. And now we're pleased to welcome to Mic Drop Dallas, Paul McCormick. He's been with Genesco Sports Enterprises for over 6 years. He's been a VP. That means he's a big shot over there since 2021. Prior to that, much of his career was spent in the UK. So we're looking forward to getting that perspective. You know, Genesco John Tatum is a friend of the podcast. Genesco, that's the founder, co-founder. Genesco is another one of those Dallas-based companies that happens to be a national and maybe even global powerhouse in sports marketing. Paul has worked on marketing campaigns with brands such as American Airlines, Red Bull, Tag Heuer, Microsoft. We've heard of all of them. Back in the day, worked at Major League Soccer for a bit. Has lots of marketing experience in the global soccer space. Paul, welcome to Mic Drop Dallas.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So, Paul, we want you to explain a little bit to our listeners exactly what is Genesco? How do you use sports to connect big brands to customers?
Yeah, sure. So Genesco Sports is primarily a sports consultancy, right? So it's really helping our corporate clients identify the right marketing approach to reach their audiences. You know, so that's primarily sports through us, but there's also other areas we tap into, including, you know, music and entertainment. Right. So our role really is to use data to help inform our clients on where they should invest. Right. So if we think about the NFL or FIFA World Cup or NBA, all of those have different audiences. So for us, it's about understanding our clients' objectives, which message they're trying to convey, which audience they're trying to reach, and then finding the right vehicle to do that. And sports marketing is a really powerful tool to achieve that.
So you're kind of hitting upon my next part of in terms of why sports are so important, or maybe the uniquely effective avenue in being able to drive that engagement for some of your brands to be able to target those right consumers.
Yeah, I mean, you are completely right. Like, sports is very unique. Right, like in like today's fragmented media world, you know, it's estimated that consumers receive over 5,000 brand messages a day. Right, so there's a lot of brand noise and communications. Whereas sports is so emotive, right? It grabs attention. You know, it's generational. So there's different ways of consuming sport, but you know, from 18 years old to 40 to 60. You know, it's a generational method of reaching consumers. And certainly, you know, the consumption of sports changes. It's ever evolving. You know, it used to be purely broadcast. Now it's very mobile focused, very organic style, less stylized content. But the passion is there, right? So the ability for a corporate client or a brand who's looking to grow their business, sport is really a great accelerator for that, right? Because they can reach audiences, they can tap into their emotions, they can connect their brand to the things people love, and then they can speak to the consumers about their product.
So, Paul, the Sports Business Journal just named Dallas number one sports business city last year in the United States. How would you describe the DFW marketplace from a sports sponsorship standpoint? I mean, we have a lot of different corporate headquarters here. You're talking about the passion, investment in community as well. How would you give an overview of our sports landscape here?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dallas Fort Worth is a thriving sports business market. So I moved here in 2017 from London and working in sports marketing back in the UK. And I purposely chose this market to move to. Like, at that point, it was already growing. And I feel in those 7 years, things have accelerated so much, right? You have a really strong corporate business community, right, who's invested in sports, that believes the power of sports. And then linked to that, you've got a really unique fan culture. Like in Texas and certainly in DFW, sports is everything, right? It's a real, like, it's in people's lives from a young age, both playing and watching. And I think what you're seeing now with the population dynamics is that you're getting LA is a very transient city, but Dallas is starting to become, people moving here from different parts of the country. So you have the real core support of the Dallas teams, but you're also getting in that kind of transient nature. And I think it's interesting for us, from an agency point of view, is that, we obviously do a lot of work in data and understanding fan habits, is that there's a real strong overlap between, the what I call the core Dallas teams, right? Cowboys, Mavs, Stars, Rangers. So for a brand, when you invest across multiple teams, it allows you to really play across the calendar, right? Because one season finishes, you can go into the next. So as a brand, you can build a connection with those fan bases across different teams. And I think for DFW, which is really interesting, is just the amount of teams as well, that emerging teams. I think about Major League Cricket, obviously launched their team last year. USL Women's team is, going to play this year. Dallas Wings, who I'd put more in the core teams, announced this week, sold out season tickets. Like, so there's such passion for sports in this market. Plus, you combine that with the corporate community that wants to build and be like part of that growth. And you've then got these huge fan bases. Plus, you've got these emerging leagues coming in, and the fans are really helping to build those, right? They're like buying in. They're really, helping to elevate those teams and make them become part of the core Dallas sports culture. So I think it's great. I think there's, I think there's lots more to come. Lots of events. I'm sure you guys are busy working on those. World Cup, which I know we're going to kind of talk about in a second. Like, I think there's just a, I think Dallas is a thriving place from a sports business point of view.
You mentioned the Wings, Paul. What is your take on the recent explosion in, interest in women's sports? We see, Caitlin Clark with a reported $28 million Nike deal. We see her in National State Farm commercials. How is Genesco involving your clients in this women's sports surge that we're seeing from a marketing standpoint? How are you engaging?
Yeah, so we're like really bullish. I think during the pandemic, we, as all of us analyzed a lot of trends on fan consumption, women's sports really started to rise during the pandemic. I think part of that was just there was increased eyeballs looking for content. And I think what's really exciting for us is a couple of reasons. One, when you start to get superstars like Caitlin Clark, it's the kind of rising tides analogy, right? I think, people will be more drawn. She's given it a platform. March Madness was a huge success, right, in terms of women's sports, and that's going to continue. And that's the key thing, is that all of us in the industry have a role to play to really give a platform to women's sports, because we've already seen, once you do it, how the fans react. So from a partnership point of view, we're like really excited. I think it's not just women's basketball, right? You've got Women's World Cup had record viewership last summer in Australia and New Zealand. Yeah, women's volleyball's on the rise. I think the key thing which corporate brands can be part of is it's really about giving the platform for broadcast viewership, mm-hmm. right? And it's about us influencing our broadcast partners to understand and to really help accelerate that growth. I think if we do that, if we give the platform, I think it'll continue to explode in terms of growth.
So you see this as a movement, not a moment, sounds like.
Oh, completely, yeah. Like, I think there's like moments that will happen which will definitely spike the growth. But I think if we look, you know, at the data we see around, you know, younger sport involvement, and that's on the rise. You combine that, the whole ingredients with media are starting to put it on more prime time, give it much more broadcast visibility. And then you add superstars into the mix. And that's a real strong ingredients mix for this to kind of, you know, I think these early years will be seen as kind of phase one of, you know, the growth. But I think for the next 10 years, it's going to be huge.
As someone who grew up and worked in the UK, you moved here from London, you mentioned 7 years ago. Were you prepared for the sports business and brand juggernaut that the Cowboys are? Was it more than you expected? Did you understand it even living over there?
It's a funny one, yeah. So from a kind of personal point of view, I can give an anecdote. So when I was growing up, my dad used to come and do some work in Texas, and he'll come back, you know, 1991, 92, 93. So when, you know, great times for Cowboys football, and he'll bring back, you know, Cowboys memorabilia and merch, and I'll take it to school. And this was pre-internet days, so it was like he had found something on the moon and brought it back. So I always had a passion for the Cowboys, and then when I moved here, I obviously knew about the team, I knew about the facilities, but being here in market and being here in the US just blows you away. You know, they are more than a football team, right? They're a lifestyle brand. There's only five or six of those in the world really that have that clout, that take it beyond sports. And I think, you know, even, you know, the like vision the team had for the stadium, for the star, was, you know, industry changing, industry defining even. And I think no one has matched that yet, right? I think that like power they have as a brand, plus the experience you have as a consumer, I think it's, you know, they are best in class in terms of partnerships and how brands can reach consumers.
Now, I also mentioned you have experience in soccer. So give us your take on what FIFA World Cup coming here in 2026 will mean from a, you know, a sports business standpoint, the fan experience, but from your vantage point at Genesco, how do you see the impact of the World Cup coming here in 2026?
I just think it'd be huge, and obviously shout out to kind of Monica and her team for, you know, doing an amazing job of bringing FIFA World Cup to DFW. Like, you know, personally and professionally, I couldn't be more excited, right? Like this, the power of FIFA World Cup. I almost think that, you know, because the US is, and Mexico and Canada are going to host, but the US is such a busy sports market. I don't think anyone's really fully appreciated, apart from a few, right, who are heavily involved in it, how big this is going to be. You know, it's the biggest sporting event currently. You know, the World Cup 22 had a total viewership audience of 19 billion, right, which is twice the Summer Olympics. And plus, that was with 32 teams. Right now, it's 48. So you got 104 games versus 64. So just the like map on audience and the US is going to make it huge. I think, you know, DFW with its 9 games, right, is going to be a huge moment for the Metroplex, for the biggest sporting event in history coming, you know, aside from Doha in 22, because it was hosted in one city. Like, no city's ever hosted that amount of games for one World Cup. So just the positioning of DFW, you know, for Latin America, for the US, for the airport, will bring in so many fans. And I think the Metroplex and its sports culture, it loves sports, right? And there's so many different heritages and backgrounds in this market, is I think you're really going to get a festival of soccer or football that will run 3 or 4 months into the tournament and then create a huge legacy coming out of it. So we're like really excited at Genesco. You know, we have a number of FIFA clients who, you know, are going to activate in the market. And even those who are not part of the FIFA family, I think everyone's going to come together and make this thing really special.
Well, Sully, all of a sudden, Paul just made my anxiety and blood pressure go up in terms of talking about the World Cup, and I'm envisioning all the rest of the work that is yet to be done as we start this journey. But also a little bit brings tears to my eyes, because it truly is going to be something special, or that's what we hope, and the intent of bringing everyone in. Paul, you mentioned a little bit about leaving a legacy and the importance of that too. Many of the brands that you represent that may be already involved in the FIFA World Cup, as well as those that aren't but are here locally or you know, want to support in some way. How important is it to leave a lasting legacy, as well as what are maybe the top two things that we need to make top of mind as we continue our planning process?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for any client we've had that's talked around FIFA World Cup, has really purpose has been at the heart of what they're focused on. It was the last World Cup in the US, 94. MLS was born out of that. So it's how do we make sure that, you know, FIFA World Cup 26 will be a huge moment, but equally as important, what's the legacy that comes out of there? And I think, you know, we obviously analyze the population dynamics a lot and youth soccer players and growth of that. So it's how do we create a path that comes out of 26? I think the kind of key thing really is access, right? It's like facilities. Now, it's obviously nationally, it's a big objective. I think locally, it's like, how does everyone contribute towards that, right? So that's access to playing, trying to solve some of the kind of pay-for-play challenges that are out there, access to coaching, access to like fields to play. It's interesting with soccer, like unlike most sports, it's a ball, it's a bit of ground, and it's a player, right? There's kind of basic fundamentals which have grown a sport across the world. But I think there's ways we can supercharge that by giving access to different types of coaching, making sure it's not always that structured, because a lot of the time when the best players in soccer are created, it's not actually part of a super structured environment. It's about touches on the ball and creating skills. But there needs to be some direction towards that. So I think that's kind of one part of it. And the kind of second route can be in of like, how does the whole soccer community from Major League Soccer, from US soccer, how does everyone get aligned on objectives? Everyone's trying to do the same thing. So it's really making sure that when they look at 26 and the 20, 50 years beyond that, how is everyone integrated to achieve success?
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly. And I think also with that, from a legacy standpoint, we're trying to look at what does it mean to then also come back and host a Women's World Cup into the future, and how can we use this 2026 Men's World Cup to ensure that we're successful hosting that women's one when we have that opportunity, whether it's 2027, 2031, whatever it may be. We see the surge on the women's basketball side, and we definitely see the growth on the women's soccer side. So trying to integrate that into it as well.
Fingers crossed for 27.
Yeah, or 31. Yeah. Well, Paul, I really appreciate you joining us today here on Mic Drop Dallas. Thank you for all your support throughout the few years as we were working towards this FIFA World Cup and what that looks like for DFW. So just wanted to say thank you for that, and thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yes. And now over to Rachel for a word from one of our partners.
Get ready, sports fans. This fall is stacked with events right here in the Big D. From food sport to football, the number one sports business city has something for everyone. Head to dallassports.org to sign up for access to exclusive ticket announcements, discounts, and pre-sales to be part of the next big win.
Thanks, Rachel. And now we're happy to welcome Dan McDowell to Mic Drop Dallas, longtime ticket mainstay. You remember him from the Bad Radio program with friend of the pod, Bob Sturm. And then the Hang Zone with the great Jake Kemp. Of course, they departed in June of last year. We won't get into all that. But Dan and Jake, you know, stayed positive and said, let's try something different. And they have, transforming their Hang Zone show into the Dumb Zone podcast. Dan is a self-described chill guy, but we know he'll have some hot takes for us on all that's happening on the local sports scene. So, Dan, welcome to Mic Drop Dallas. Really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm intimidated by your former guest list. I didn't realize Bob was part of that. So now I'm really, the bar has been raised.
Yeah. Bob has been on at least once, maybe twice, but you're up to the task. I have no doubt. So first, let's start. Tell our listeners about the Dumb Zone and how you're using Patreon as part of that. Several months in now, how's it going?
I suppose it's subjective to how's it going. I think it's going okay. We only jumped on Patreon because when we left the ticket, as you alluded to, and I don't know if you don't want to totally get into it, but it's you know, we left and we didn't want to be viewed as competing with the ticket, and we decided let's do a podcast, but we'll put it behind a paywall. We won't accept advertising. We don't want to, you know, step on our former employer's toes in that way in any way. And so that's the only way we could really do it. And we got a fairly good following on there. And so we kind of continue to do that, even though now we are opened up and we're allowed to accept advertising. So I guess we're taking the next step in our, you know, journey, whatever that sounds silly, but it's you know, now we're going to add a couple of free podcasts per week and have it ad based, free to the listener, but ad supported. You know, overall, I guess it's going good. But we're still kind of learning this world outside of terrestrial radio.
Good though to move along and advance with in a positive way like you have. Now, before we get to the Maverick Stars and Rangers, we got to start with the Cowboys. As we record this on Wednesday morning, of course, the draft starts tomorrow night, Thursday night. A lot of analysis about what they should do. Didn't do much in free agency. What is your take on what the Cowboys ought to do with the picks that they have?
I think the picks that they have, they should probably be what most would consider boring and, you know, fill some needs that are kind of glaring if you are, you know, paying attention to the team, but won't really be splashy. You know, there's no skill positions. Nobody they will pick will probably help your fantasy team numbers in any way. But, you know, they need a lot of offensive line help, interior defensive line help as well, linebackers. So I expect it to be kind of boring like that, and maybe even so boring that they trade out of the first round because they're lacking picks, you know, overall, just to get some more depth, just to get some more bodies in there. I think that might be what ends up happening after Thursday night.
The big question with fans seems to be, you know, did they do enough? You know, quiet offseason, can they improve enough to, you know, break that, you know, jinx of or that hex in the not advancing in the playoffs? So, did they do enough, or can they get enough done through the draft? They don't have that kind of middle tranche of picks that have been traded away.
I say no. I don't think they can. I don't think they have done enough. I am share the frustration of many Cowboy fans to like, what are they doing? Obviously they have a pretty good comeback, which is, hey, we've got the second best record in the last few years in the NFL, you know, in the regular season to Kansas City. So overall, you know, they do have a mindset of get in the tournament and, you know, anything can happen. And that's a good theory for the last 25 years that anything can happen. It just kind of hasn't happened with the Cowboys. It is perplexing how they can have such good regular season teams and continue to have such playoff failure. But it's also perplexing when you know that they're the highest valued franchise in sports, or, you know, certainly in the NFL, and they continue to not seem to, you know, Jerry will say we're all in, but what have you seen to suggest that they're, you know, all in, that they're, this is, that they're totally going for it, that they're going to add something this and this, you know, there's no splashiness. It's frustrating. It's perplexing. And I suppose, you know, hope is the only way, you know, that, that you can really squint and see this thing getting better. They are a playoff team, so that's good. There's a lot of teams that would love to be able to, you know, feel that going into a season. But it does seem those teams around them are really trying hard to, you know, add, keep doing things, Philly making moves, you know. All these teams are just trying to get better, it seems. And the Cowboys almost seem happy to be where they are and that, hey, maybe things will fall different come this season.
We'll see. Now, shifting gears to the Mavericks, huge win last night in Los Angeles. Great defensive effort, which is not something we say a lot about that group, and they stepped up last night. So even the series against their the third time, of course, they're playing the Clippers. What do you think is in store for games 3 and 4 at the AAC? Can they lock this thing down? Kawhi back in the lineup? What do you think?
Man, I really hope so. I'm really, really high on the Mavs right now. Is really, obviously, is their, you know, second half of the season or after the trade deadline, how they've been playing. It's been awesome. And nothing could have been, you know, what could have been worse besides, I suppose, a Luka injury in game one. That was as puzzling as, you know, the Cowboys playoff failures, even more so, just the way they've been playing. That lineup was like, what was it, 15 or 16 and one going into that game, that particular starting lineup. So just to be smacked in the mouth like that and then to come back last night with that great effort. Boy, late, it seemed worrisome.
But they pulled it off.
You know, I went into this thinking the Mavs are going to win this thing in six, maybe even five, just the way they've been playing. The expectations are really high. I think it'd be a supreme disappointment to not get past the Clippers in the first round. Used to be a lot more predictable. And what I find very interesting is that, you know, if you look back through Major League Baseball or the NFL, how they used to really, really be against free agency and player movement because that would upset the balance of the league. Well, if you look at the NBA, the balance of the league has never been, there's never been more balance. It kind of used to be, you know, if the Bulls were good, you know, that you knew they were going to be in the finals. Even the, you know, the Cavs and Warriors for many years, you kind of knew that's going to be your final two teams. Right now, are you confident in picking the final two teams in the NBA? I think, you know, never has there been more parity in the league. And I don't think anybody would have predicted that when kind of LeBron made his decision and really what I think has started the player empowerment movement to where, you know, different teams can be, you know, the Clippers could go all the way. The Mavs could go all the way this year. I don't think it's going to be tough getting through Denver, but, you know, anything can happen these days. So I'm really loving it.
Yeah, it's great.
So Dan, I know you're very high on the Mavs. So now we're going to talk about how you're feeling about our Stars. We're recording this on the morning of game two of the Stars Golden Knights series. Dallas is down 1-0, has given up home ice advantage. What is your take? Can the Stars come back and advance here?
Yeah, I think they absolutely can. The NHL has, you know, had the parity that I speak of in the NBA for quite some time, though. You know, anything can happen in the NHL playoffs. You know, an 8 seed can beat a 1 seed. It's always been kind of unpredictable like that. You can get a hot goalie. You can get a certain guys get really rolling. The Stars are stacked, though. So you got to like this team. It kind of seems like they've been on a nice, the uphill climb to where, you know, they've got the mix of, you know, really young talent, good young talent with their veterans. So I certainly Vegas is a tough draw to have a, you know, a finals team from last year, be such a low seed. And of course, Stars fans are very aware that they perhaps manipulated the salary cap a little bit to get themselves in this position. But that makes it fun, you know? So yeah, anything, they did give up home ice, but I don't know what that really means. I think it'll be a 7-game series no matter what.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very exciting here to have both Mavs and Stars in the playoffs again at the same time, feeling strong, and hopefully we'll progress. So now we're going to switch over to the Rangers. Rangers are in second place, just over 500 or around 500. What's your take on our Rangers coming off that World Series win?
Well, my take is that last year was obviously amazing. Baseball, kind of the same thing as a sport. You know, any team can end up winning it. I don't think you would have gone into the playoffs saying the Rangers are the best team in baseball when you started the playoffs. But it's it's about how you finish it. I think they want it. It's almost like they want it ahead of time, ahead of Chris Young's schedule. I've been fascinated by the Rangers for the past couple of years, too, because they've done things very different. Whereas, you know, your Houston Astros kind of set the model a few years ago, which was, all right, get really, really bad, trade away everything you have, don't spend any money, just get young talent, flood your farm system. And then after those players start to develop a little bit, now you get, now you'll add a key free agent or two, and now you'll make a big trade for some veteran leadership. And that's how we can move into, you know, being a dominant team for a long time. And he, you know, the Astros clearly are. They're very good. Maybe mix in a little surveillance as well, and you've got yourself a World Series champion. The Rangers, though, they went out and signed huge free agents while they were a bad team. They didn't add to like a already getting good team, you know. So they did it in the opposite form. They did prove that spending money does work. You know, go get the right guys, spend the money on the right guys. And then the young talent is kind of coming up and developing around them. And that's interesting, too, because you see that they are, you know, now this young talent can see Corey Seager, can see Marcus Semien, can see how they prepare and work and how did they get to that level instead of kind of having to figure some things out on their own for a couple years and losing a ton of games. So, you know, it's great. The Rangers do seem like they're poised to be a pretty good team, like kind of just in the mix for you know, the next 5 or 6 years. Dallas sports are pretty great right now.
Oh,
if you're the Dallas Sports Commission, I don't know if you have, you know, other Phoenix Sports Commission and they're your rival or something, but it's like, as far as the records of all the local teams, can you guys remember when there's ever been a better time? The Stars, they're all at this a really, really high level right now. I know like we said, the Cowboys haven't done it in the playoffs, but regular season records, I think we could put our city up against any city in the nation right now.
You know, you make up a good point. I'm going to start some banter with some of my counterparts in some of the other cities after this.
Watch out, Orlando. Here comes Monica.
Yeah. A sport after sport type of basis, depending on where we're at. But boy, I can poke the bear on this one with a few of them. Dan,
you need to get yourself some of those sports bets that the mayors are all in on. You know?
Oh yeah, I've done one of those actually. It was on the World Series with Janice Burke out of Houston, and it was a Powerade challenge. So I think she had blue Powerade that her staff got to dump on her. So,
okay. Is there video of that?
Oh yeah, there's video of that. Yes.
So you would have had to have that.
Yes. If the Astros would have won.
All right. I feel like that's going to get you the clicks, the downloads.
Well, Dan, before I turn this back over to Sully, I just want to get your take on the women's basketball, the Dallas Wings, the WNBA. Obviously, we're a lot of hype coming up about Caitlin Clark coming to Dallas, playing with the Indiana Fever, playing our Wings in the first preseason game. Sully and I were talking earlier about the possibility of the Wings moving to Dallas to Auditorium downtown by City Hall. So just want to get your take on that.
Yeah, I'm not much of a WNBA fan, but I'm very aware of Caitlin Clark, as we all are. And it's kind of interesting just to see what's going to happen. You know, is it just a moment that women's college basketball had and women's basketball in general, and that'll kind of fade away and she will blend in? But if she comes into the league and does kind of a – if she plays like she played in college, where she's chucking them up from near half court and making them and, you know, just kind of dominating the way she did, that style of play is pretty fun. You know, Brittany Griner was a pretty big deal in college too, but then she kind of joined the WNBA and – she's still, you know, a deal, but it's not like a must tune in type of thing. But the fact that Caitlin Clark already has like teams, you know, moving venues so they can get more fans in the games and all that when she comes to visit, that's, you know, it's kind of a sign that things are a bit different. I remain skeptical as to whether the WNBA will ever be anything of, you know, of importance that we want to really pay attention to all the time. But, you know, I'll be excited to see if it does happen.
We have to leave you with a couple more questions, Dan. And I want to start with World Cup. We have, you know, obviously the FIFA World Cup coming in 2026, which has consumed untold countless hours, days, weeks, months, and even years of Monica's life. I don't know how big of a international soccer fan you are, but what do you think that could mean? I mean, this is, you know, obviously a huge deal. What could it mean to our community as a sports market?
Man, you guys are giving me my the subjects that I am least knowledgeable about WNBA, and now we get to World Cup. I really have very little on the soccer field as far as knowledge. I have very little knowledge about anything anyway, but soccer is way down there. I think it's cool, but I have no idea of the economic impact and all that kind of stuff. I always remain skeptical about that stuff too, but clearly, you know, the World Cup is a different animal because a lot of people, you know, will travel here. I remember the day that they were calling, you know, you guys were big on that, right? That they were actually awarding the final. And it was very disappointing to all those. I think everybody assumed that Dallas was going to get that, or, you know, Arlington, the DFW area, we can say.
More games than anybody else. So that was the good news.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a lot of games, but it's, you know, it's tough, I guess, to compete with New York. If they just, they're just always New York, and we can always just default to that.
Right. Or New Jersey.
Yeah. That's right. That's where the final is. It's New Jersey, actually.
No, but that, no, you're right. That's tough to compete with that market.
Hey, Sully, don't worry. I'm going to make it my mission here over the next 2 years to make sure that Dan knows about soccer and World Cup. I will educate him and provide him with all the information from a World Cup standpoint. So the next time we do this, he's going to be spewing. Soccer is going to actually be moving up on his list.
So I have time to learn.
Yeah, you have. Yeah.
The World Cup's like not next month, right?
2 years, 2 years, plenty of time.
Plenty of time. Now, the last thing I wanted to ask you is our on-air producer. There's a rumor that our on-air producer, Next Level, Marcus Carr, was an intern on your radio show. It was actually his first internship in college. So this goes back, you know, not many years, but a few years.
2019.
Yeah. So what, you got any good stuff on Next Level, Marcus Carr, you can, stories or memories of his performance as an intern on Bad Radio?
All I know is he was very good. So we had, you know, when we had interns, when I worked at the Ticket, we would have 4 to 8 a year, actually. And so we've had hundreds of interns over my time there. And, when someone will ask me for a recommendation, I will, hey, do you recommend this guy? And it's like hard to remember, man, that was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So I will go to my text messages and search their name. And sometimes you'll find a guy that, you know, it'll be like, hey, can you redo that? Like, you did this, but you did it wrong. And over and over and over, you see frustration, or in the email, you know, like, hey, you could just tell, well, Marcus, I went through my text messages when when I learned he was your producer, and he's actually awesome. I would have recommended him highly. So I'm glad that he's in the business and doing well.
He has made something of himself and even got a graduate degree at SMU. And of course he's a titan over at Tony Faye PR, which is kind of running the world. So the award-winning Tony Faye PR, I should say. So yeah, we love Marcus and are grateful that we have him helping out with Mic Drop Dallas. So Dan, thanks for your time today. This was fun. All the best with the Dumb Zone podcast, both free versions and through Patreon. Glad to see that that's going well for you and Jake. Your voices need to be heard here in Dallas, Fort Worth, and beyond. So thank you for joining us today.
Okay. And Monica, we'll talk soccer throughout the next 2 years.
Sounds great. I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Dan. So on behalf of Monica Paul and the Sports Commission, thanks to Dan and Paul McCormick for joining us. Thanks to the Mic Drop production team, Merrick's Gooden of Tony Faye PR, Alex Gilbert over at the Sports Commission, Danielle filling in for Marcus Carr this week, and of course, our showrunner, Tony Faye. Until next time, thanks for listening, everybody.